Welcome to the Soccer Central Podcast.
Well, good Thursday, everyone. It is February 23rd. This is, as the man just said, the Soccer Central Podcast. I'm James Sharman, joined as always, or usually anyway, on Thursdays. I think we missed last week, actually. I was sick. But it's John Molinaro, Sportsnet.ca's chief football writer. J-Mo, there's a lot to get to today in what's been a Champions League week. Obviously, this weekend, some big games across the board. We got the Wayne Rooney situation ongoing as we record. Santi Cazorla's out for the season for your Arsenal. And the Leicester narrative continues. Later today, we'll be talking to a good friend of the show, James Sharp, of the Leicester Mercury News, to discuss Leicester. And last time we spoke to James, I'm trying to think when that was.
Just before the title, I think, like, they were, I think, 2 or 3 weeks away. It was before they clinched.
No, we spoke to him this season.
Did we speak to him after?
Yeah, this season for sure.
Did we? Oh, okay, yeah, I don't recall.
We spoke to him, it was before Christmas, obviously. It had been a slow start to the defense of their crown.
Oh, I remember now. Right? Yeah, okay.
And I think back then, if I remember, he was showing some concern about what might unfold this season.
Right.
So we'll get an update from James.
Right.
Is Leicester going down? That's got to be the big question.
Yes. And James was in Seville yesterday covering the Leicester City-Sevilla match in Champions League, so we'll ask him about that as well.
They're okay in that game.
Sorry?
They're okay in that game.
Yeah, I mean, they were...
As they have been in Europe throughout.
They were outplayed. I mean, Sevilla really should have put that one away. So, I mean, that crucial away goal... I think it was Vardy who scored. I mean, that's massive because they're still in this tie. By all rights, they were, you know, severely outplayed in that game. So
severely,
yep.
Outplayed. Severely.
Severely. Outplayed. Yes, I went with severely. Sorry.
But some other games this past week in Europe, a lot of fun. Juventus beat Porto 2-0 in the end. Your Juventus,
yes,
who are just finding what they always find at this time of year. They're just kind of hitting that pace. And what Allegri's done with that team this season with his formations, and he's now managed to get, Higuain, Mandzukic, Dybala, all in the field at the same time as well.
It's changed formations again.
Yeah, so. Again, what was 3-5-2 for a while there.
Yeah, more of a 4-2-3-1 with Mandzukic kind of playing on the left side. Yeah, I'm on the left side of a three. So, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, they dominated Porto yesterday, even before Telles, the Brazilian, got sent off for two incredibly rash tackles, literally 2 minutes apart. Not sure what he was thinking. But, it was a typical Juventus performance, just kind of dominated and were getting frustrated for a long time that they couldn't break down Porto, but they didn't panic. They just kind of resolutely stuck with it, and they eventually did score through Pjaka, the Croatian, and Dani Alves, who both came off the bench. So Max Allegri ends up looking like a genius for those moves, I guess.
Is Mandzukic grown up? Because I'm still reading, it's taking a while actually, Pep Confidential. And when he took over Bayern Munich, it was obviously Mandzukic was the man up front there. And
right.
At this point in the book, he talks about how he's a hard guy to coach. He's very, very strong personality.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously very good at what he does, and he'll die for your team in the field when he's playing, but off the field he can be a bit of a distraction.
Mm.
Do you think he's playing wide now? Right, that's not really his natural position.
Right.
Has he grown up?
Absolutely. You know, it's amazing because there's been no sort of problems with him. He's playing pretty much as a setup man, so he's used to kind of using his physical size to kind of create space for Higuain and Dybala. He's doing a lot of defensive work. So it's almost kind of like, it's not an apt comparison, but kind of like what Jozy Altidore does for Sebastian Giovinco, kind of do all the muck raking up front to create the opportunities for Giovinco. And that's pretty much what he's doing. And you know what? He's done it with incredible unselfishness and aplomb, and he hasn't complained at all. And he's been really an unheralded hero for Juventus, both domestically and in the Champions League. So, yeah, hasn't been a distraction in the least. They're quite the opposite. Valuable player.
Given what they did this offseason, obviously bringing in Higuain for a lot of money.
Yeah.
Was it 76 million pounds?
It was 90 million euro. Yeah, I don't know what pounds that would be.
Yeah. Obviously, it came from the Pogba money. And people question that. Higuain, he's kind of old.
Right.
There isn't much left in his prime. 19 goals so far this season.
He's pretty good.
Been dominant once again. But have they got to win the Champions League this year to really kind of validate that? They always win the Serie A. Mm-hmm. With or without Higuain, they're going to win the Serie A.
Sure.
Right? Obviously, it helps the way he's playing right now. But have they got to make a real statement in this tournament? And is this the window for them?
I think so. I think the window is pretty short. I think it's like, you know, this season or next season or possibly the one after that. But it's only about a 2 or 3 season window. Yeah, I mean, you don't make investments like that without wanting to make a splash in Europe and pay dividends in the biggest club competition in the world. Ask PSG and Manchester City how frustrated they are. So, yeah, Juventus brought in guys like Higuain and Miram Pjanic was the other sort of big offseason move from AS Roma. And the fact that they brought them from Napoli and Roma, their two biggest rivals domestically, I don't think that was an accident. They wanted to strengthen, but they also wanted to weaken their biggest Serie A rivals. You don't make moves like that without, you know, wanting to make a splash in Europe, and that's what they were brought in. So, yeah, so far, I mean, won their Champions League group, hosted Porto. It seems like they're going to go through the second round. I'm not sure that they could be considered a top favorite yet because I think Bayern is still, you know, the team to beat in Real Madrid. But certainly they're in that second tier of, you know, teams that you would consider that could possibly win this competition.
Pjanic, 5 goals, 5 assists. He's been a great signing so far.
Yeah, he's done okay in Serie A. I mean, I thought yesterday he was brilliant. He played really, really well. He's kind of just taking some time to just acclimatize himself to life in Turin. But, you know, it's been good.
What do you make of these Max Allegri rumors taking over Arsenal at some point? Now, in the past, he has mentioned that England is, you know, perhaps a future destination for him.
Right.
But if you're a Juve fan, I mean, would Arsenal be a real draw for a Juventus manager?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think just the fact of like coaching abroad is what kind of appeals to Max Allegri because he's coached, you know, his entire career in Italy, both with AC Milan and Cagliari previously. And, you know, Arsenal has for all their faults and not being, up there with the Chelseas of the world. I mean, they are still a major brand in the footballing world, right? And if you're going to go abroad, I would think that'd be one of the marquee jobs to take. So yeah, I don't doubt that he's for sure interested in that gig. Brave move by him, by the way. I just want to get this in. He benched Benucci yesterday. I don't know if people know this. So last week they played Palermo in Serie A, and Benucci after the game kind of mouthed off a little bit about Allegri and some of the substitutions he made. They won 4-1. And Allegri didn't take too kindly to it, and he benched him for this game. Benucci was in Portugal, but he didn't even dress. He wasn't even on the bench. So, that's pretty gutsy. I mean, it's one thing to have morals and to have principle and to bench a guy. You know, he could have easily said, okay, well, we're going to bench you this weekend when we play Empoli at home in Serie A. That's one thing. But to do it like in a road game against Porto, who hadn't lost at home since last April in the first leg of the Champions League, I mean, that's a pretty principled stance. So, and, you know, you have to respect Allegri for doing that. If hadn't it worked out, I'm sure he would have got all kinds of hammering, but...
He's evolved, isn't he, as a coach?
Yeah.
Because back in his Milan days, if there was one criticism in the past, it's been somewhat that he was overwhelmed by those
right.
personalities. Now, he has some big personalities in those Milan teams.
Sure.
But he wasn't the boss.
Right.
Apparently, he's the boss at Juventus.
Yeah. The fact that he was, you know, so willing to, you know, demonstrate his will and, you know, Benucci, world-class defender, I think one of the best center backs in the game, and to say to him, well, sorry, mate, you know, we're going to bench you where, you know, I can't tolerate this. I think that's great. I mean, you know, I think the fact that he took a stand and he wasn't afraid to bench, one of his best players in such an important game, I just think that speaks to the, the character of Max Allegri.
Who came in for him?
So they played Giorgio Chiellini and Andrea Barzagli in the center. And there was questions about both of them because they were both coming off injuries and there were the fitness issues, but they barely missed Benucci. I mean,
it's not
Porto didn't offer anything.
If you're playing for the back, and you have to ditch Benucci and you have Barzagli and Chiellini.
It's not too bad.
Yeah,
sure.
Pretty good choices.
Yeah, absolutely.
And obviously, Alves coming for Lichtsteiner as well and Sandro. What's Alves been like so far for Juventus this year? Obviously, he's been quite vocal this past couple of weeks, ripping into Barcelona, actually.
Yeah,
but has it been from a performance standpoint?
That's okay. I mean, again, I think he's been a useful pickup. He hasn't been a sort of a regular starter. I mean, he's had injury problems, right? So, he's been a very useful pickup. He scored that goal yesterday, he took his chance very nicely. So, it's been a good signing.
Dybala has been great again, hasn't he?
Yeah. Alexandro, I think, is really developing into one of the best left fullbacks in European football. He was absolutely brilliant yesterday. Man of the match.
Match of the week, though, comes from Manchester.
Wow.
Man City 5, Monaco 3, back and forth. Yeah. Oh, it was just incredible. Terrible defending.
Yeah.
But who cares? I love terrible defending because you see these kind of games. Right. It was every time you blinked, something happened.
Right.
And perhaps there might be more questions about both teams than answers after this one. But boy, from a spectacle standpoint, that's arguably the best match of this year's Champions League.
It was damn entertaining.
Oh, it was incredible. And I thought Monaco had it.
I did too.
I really did. And when you see Renamo Falcao, I love that because we all love Falcao, right?
Yeah.
You know, he's such a good player, but had a terrible time of it in England.
He did.
Both United and Chelsea, coming off that really bad knee injury, of course. And that's a good excuse. Couldn't acclimatize. We thought he was finished. He cuts his hair. And now he's scoring for fun. Not just in this game where he scored 2 goals, but I think 16 goals in the league for Monaco, who lead Ligue 1
yes.
this year as well. Just great to see him do so well, but you have to really, at the end of it, look at Sergio Aguero, in my mind, a guy that's been up against it recently. We thought he was on his way out. He might still be on his way out. He'd lost his spot on the team to Jesus, who then breaks a foot in his bone last week. In comes Aguero and shows that, yeah, he has got the character to really answer his critics, and he was brilliant. Forget the 2 goals.
Yeah.
He was brilliant in this match.
Yeah, I thought he was man of the match. I thought, you know, there was a lot of great performances. I mean, Falcao and Leroy Sané and Sterling and Mbappe for Monaco. I mean, there were great efforts from individual efforts on both teams. But yeah, Aguero was like another class. I mean, and he could have had that hat trick at the end, but instead he kind of set up
Stones.
Was it Stones?
Yeah.
Who
needed that goal.
Yeah.
Because he was
terrible. He got roasted. Yeah, he got roasted.
Terrible in recent months, yeah. Actually. Talk about taking a step back under Pep.
Yeah.
After taking a step forward under Pep for the first 1 or 2 months of the season.
Yeah.
A lot of pressure.
But what a game. I mean, just full of drama and back and forth, you know, played at pace. Yeah, there were, you know, the state of defending was pretty poor, but God, how could you complain? It was so entertaining and so dramatic and so many twists and turns. And, you know, when Falcao got the second goal after he missed the penalty and after, you know, Man U City tied up, I thought, that's it. A 3-2, City's not going to come back because they were done. They were spent. But, you know, brilliant cutback. I mean, they really kind of bared down and opened up that Monaco defense.
Yeah, a lot of character, which perhaps we thought was lacking on that team.
Yeah. I saw a great stat, something about Falcao. He scored more goals on this night than his entire time at Old Trafford.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I thought he'd be a success in England. I really did. But maybe asking too much.
Sometimes, you know, the culture shock changes just too much and people can't adapt.
It's true. It's a big adjustment for a lot of these players. Yeah. We're seeing it. We saw it this year with Mkhitaryan at Manchester United.
Yeah.
You know, it started off really slowly and he's found it. He's happy now. He's comfortable. But jumping from the continent to England, it's a different world.
Yeah.
It really is. It's a good world.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with it. But for a lot of these players, clearly, there's big issues. Juan Varane's probably the most famous case.
That's another one.
Never worked out.
Yeah. I can remember, I'm dating myself here, but I can remember when Zidane first moved from Bordeaux to Juventus. Now, he became like the world's best player at Juventus, but those first 6 months, you know, took him some time.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't sort of immediately take to it like a duck like to water, but he eventually got there and he was, you know, he went on to become Zinedine Zidane, as we know. So, as I said, it's, you never know with some players, it just takes a little bit of time. We also don't know what's going on in their personal lives too, right? There's could be like family issues.
With Juan Varane, when he was also at United and Chelsea.
Right.
While at United, there was a home invasion.
Did he have a home invasion too?
Home invasion, yeah.
There you go.
And I mean, just picture that, if you know, for anyone listening to this right now, your home's invaded, your family's in danger.
Right.
How are you going to focus outside of your home?
It's tough. Yeah.
You can't, right? You get it. And these kind of things come out after the fact.
Yeah.
And you crucify these players. Oh, why isn't Juan Varane the Juan Varane of Lazio or Inter Milan? He's
right.
Terrible. What a waste of money, Fergie. And then you read between the lines and, you know, find the true story and like, oh.
Right.
Okay.
Diego Forlan was another one. Remember him at United? I mean, God, he was the longest streak, like he couldn't score. And then eventually.
The World Cup for Uruguay was
amazing.
Yeah,
and then eventually goes away and he lights it up. So, I mean, as I said, it's just. It's hit or miss sometimes. You never know who's going to take to it and who's going to need a little bit more time to adapt.
It's a third world country, England, right? Really? So,
well, you said it, not me. So.
What do you expect? But a really good game. Will this be the turning point for Man City? You know, 5-3, there's still 3 away goals, right? This tie is still very much open.
Sure.
He's not going back to France.
Yeah.
Especially if Willy Caballero remains in goal.
Yeah.
And even if it's not Willy Caballero, it's going to be Claudio Bravo. So there's major issues there that continue. So I'm looking forward to the second leg out of this fixture. And thanks for giving me that one to talk about, by the way, in the preview.
Dang it, was that your game to write about?
You give me good games.
Yeah.
And I said this might be the most intriguing fixture of the knockout phase.
Well.
5-3. Thank you very much.
There you go.
I didn't call 5-3, though.
No, you called 2-1, I want to say.
I think I did. For City, right?
Yes.
Yeah, because they were home. I think I said 2-1. Well, I got the result right.
Yeah, you got the result right.
Can't believe I didn't call 5-3. Anyway, elsewhere, Atletico beat Bayer Leverkusen 4-2.
Kevin Gamero had a man of the match performance.
Yeah, he's been pretty average as well until that. So that was a big one for him.
Yeah. The Leverkusen, too, I'm going to write a story about this kid next week, but they had a 17-year-old German midfielder starting whose name totally escapes me at the moment. But he's the first player to be born to play in the Champions League who was born after the 1999 Champions League final. So, yeah, pretty amazing.
His famous win over Bayern Munich.
Over Bayern Munich and Barcelona, yeah.
So, wow, really, eh?
Yeah.
99.
Yeah.
I'm
17.
So old.
So old. Sorry, God. I didn't mean to date you.
What was Donnarumma at Milan?
He was 16 when he started.
How is he now? He's 17 now, 18?
He's 17 or 18, yeah. He's still a teenager. Yeah,
still playing great football as well.
Yeah. That was the other thing, too. Just getting back to Juve Porto real quick. You had Buffon against Casillas.
Yeah, right.
You know, two of the best goalkeepers of all time, I really think so.
Who was the best in their prime? Whose career? I know, take away the bias and the Juve and the Italian bias. Yeah. You're Casillas, Buffon in their prime. Buffon might actually still be in his prime. Anyway. Those two guys, who do you pick?
Well, in terms of like who's better in their prime, I honestly don't know. I think it's too close to call. In terms of all time, and I'm not just saying this because of the Juventus and Italy bias, but I would pick Buffon just because I think he's been more consistent for longer than Casillas. Casillas, I think the last couple of years has dropped off a little bit, and that's no disrespect to Porto and the Portuguese league, but you know, Buffon has kind of done it at the very top for I would say longer than Casillas, but yeah, they're both fantastic.
No, you're right.
Goalkeepers.
I agree. Yeah.
There you go.
Buffon.
Yeah, okay. 100%.
I would take Buffon. If I could build my all-time great football team, there's a good chance Buffon's in goal.
Yeah, he would start for me. Yeah. I mean, Casillas, on an individual level, has been more successful at club level because he's won Champions League, and he's won more international honors as well. But I think just from that consistency basis over a longer period of time, it's probably Buffon.
And Buffon's missus was never behind the goals doing news reports during his games.
No, that's true.
Unlike Casillas.
That's true.
Yep.
What was her name? Sarah Cabernero or something like that?
That sounds about right. That's very good, yeah.
I remember seeing
her. Strange you to remember that.
Yeah, well, because I remember seeing her in South Africa when I covered the World Cup. She was in the press room one time. And
I can't picture that. You're on this stage, the biggest stage in the world. You're playing World Cup. You're playing for Real Madrid, whatever it is, right? And you're focused on the game and you know that 15 yards away is your wife.
Yeah.
Yapping into a microphone. I couldn't relax. What is she saying?
Yeah.
And could she be that constructive in a criticism of her husband?
I wouldn't think so.
May not be her job.
Yeah, probably. Fairness. Yeah. I remember she interviewed him after the World Cup win.
Yeah, that's right.
And it was a pretty famous interview. And like, I think he got like two or three questions in and he just kind of wagged his finger and ended up kissing her on the lips and then walked off. So it's pretty funny.
Yeah. Great memories. Great memories. Before we move on to James Sharp, I want to talk about this Wayne Rooney situation. It's not a situation, there's just speculation. He's leaving Manchester United. Now, this has come to a head because the Chinese Super League's transfer deadline is, I believe, Tuesday.
Yes.
So the media's jumped aboard this, saying his agent's in China right now. They are talking, and perhaps Sunday and the EFL Cup final against Southampton could be a swan song for United.
Is it this weekend, the EFL Cup?
Yeah, Sunday, yeah.
Wow.
Now, just before we start recording, Rooney put out a statement saying that he will not be leaving Manchester United currently.
Wow.
Now, doesn't mean he's not leaving in the summertime, but right now he'll be there. He wants to be part of this drive to the FA Cup, to the Europa League. And if you're Jose Mourinho and you know this guy's leaving at some point, but he still plays a role and there's so many games this year, you're involved in so many fronts. I think Wayne Rooney's still got an important role at United. Not as a starter, obviously, but you need players, you need meat.
Sure. Right?
It'd be dumb to let him go now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think you let him finish out the year. You're competing on, you've got the EFL Cup this weekend. You're trying to get back top four in Premier League. You're still involved in the Europa League. So you're competing. Are they still in the FA Cup?
Yeah.
Still that too. So you're involved in three or four competitions. You need depth to rotate through all those guys. Otherwise, you know, players are going to tire out. So, yeah, absolutely. I still think he's got enough left in the tank to help them out this season.
I write about this on my Three Thoughts blog, which I'll be sending to you shortly, by the way.
Sweet.
But about Rooney and other fading stars like David Villas, Frank Lampard's, you know, these aging stars, they're leaving the big club.
Right.
They're going somewhere else. There's always a fit somewhere. Like, you can see Villa going to MLS. There's a natural kind of fit there, right? I mentioned you could see Xavi going to the Middle East. You know, you could kind of see it. Okay, why not? He can still play. He can play a role, make a lot of money. I understand that. Quite a cultural guy as well.
Yes.
These players, you see Fitz Ibra, you can see him one day finishing in MLS. Rooney, I don't know where the natural fit is. I can't picture Rooney anywhere apart from England. And if it's not Manchester United, no one's going to pay those wages.
Yeah.
So what options does he have? Can you see him anywhere?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't really know.
Right, because he's born and bred Lancashire,
right,
England, right. He's only ever played there. He's not criticizing Rooney at all, but he appears to be a pretty simple guy as far as he knows what he likes. You know, the home comforts. Right. You know, he's an Englishman, a proud Englishman, and I just don't see him fitting. Can you see Rooney in China, really?
No.
Can you see Rooney in MLS? It's a bit of a stretch.
Maybe.
See it, perhaps.
Could you see him moving to another Premier League club?
I think he could. He's
like
good
assuming
enough.
He takes the decrease in wages. I mean, what would be a good fit for him?
Well, none of the big clubs would take him, right? He's not going to City.
Right.
Right? He's not going to, you know, who?
Does he go back home? Does he go back to Everton?
Do they want him? That ship sailed, I think. You know,
they're
a decent team now. Is he going to play ahead of Lukaku? No. You know, he just doesn't fit in that system either. If he's going to become a midfielder, we keep hearing about, well, they just signed Schneiderlin for a lot of money.
Right.
Right? They got midfielders. I don't know where else he would go. I really don't. And is he prepared to take that? If he drops down an echelon to another team, you know, is he prepared to take that? I am no longer good enough to play for a top team.
Right.
In England, my home.
Right.
I'm going to join Everton. I'm going to join, you know, I don't know, you name it, you know, an average team, Stoke.
I wonder if a team like Newcastle comes back up, because that'd be like a major team, and he could kind of be this, you know, the focal point of.
That's a pretty good.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a pretty good observation there, actually. Yeah, I mean, Dwight Gayle is, I guess, their top striker right now.
And right.
Is he really going to be a top striker in the Premier League?
Right.
Is Rooney? Maybe he'll redefine himself as a midfielder.
Yeah. You know?
And that's a good point. Newcastle might be the one. It's a big enough club.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's a massive club.
It'd be a big story when they come back up.
Yeah, and you could see them, like, if they would come, it looks like they're going to come back up, that they could sort of potentially, this is just me kind of spitballing here, but he's the kind of guy who they would sort of build around. And
yeah.
So just say, okay, you're going to be our, you know, our main forward, and, you know, we're going to give the attack over to you. So,
yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Interesting.
Maybe that.
If he can play that role now. I don't know if he can, you know, on a regular basis, but... He's at old 31, right? It's as simple as that. That's why he's on his way out of United.
I wonder if a move to MLS would be... I could kind of see that, especially with the new Los Angeles club coming into the league.
His brother played here, right?
He did, yeah. I could, you know, potentially see him at the new Los Angeles club or the Galaxy or... Like, if he comes to MLS, he's not coming to Chicago or
Although, I was
Columbus.
Talking to Danny Dicchio about this before, and he said he had a lot of trouble in MLS. It's such a physical, athletic league now.
Yeah.
Which he isn't
right
anymore. And as Steven Gerrard and other players will tell you, know, that is a real grind as well.
Yeah, well, I think the travel is certainly a grind, and that's something they kind of, you know, aren't used to. But I've often wondered about the whole, well, MLS is a physical league and you have to adapt. I wonder if that gets overplayed a lot. Do you know what I mean? Because Premier League's pretty physical too.
Yeah, yeah, physical, but athletic, though. It's very, it's more English style perhaps than Serie A or Spain.
But I wonder, like, would it be that much of a difference for him?
Yeah, I wonder.
I
think I'm kind of with you. I think he would, for a year or two, could still score a lot of goals in this league.
Yeah.
You know, if he's health aside, if he's healthy.
Right.
I think he's still good enough to score goals at this level in MLS.
Sure.
And it might be a grind, and maybe the pace would get to him. But
I think the travel would absolutely, I think that would be, when people say, well, the travel would be a grind and that's something to overcome, I get that, because that's something that they're totally not used to, you know, playing in England.
Yeah.
In Europe, so I get that, but you know, the physical nature of the club, of the league, I think that gets overblown sometimes.
Well, we'll see. As I mentioned, he's just come out of a statement just prior to us recording this podcast saying that he is staying at Manchester United at least for the foreseeable future. So we'll discuss this, I'm sure, in the weeks and months to come. Well, from Rooney to Leicester City. What a story they've been once again this season. Generally not the greatest story for their fans, but they don't care. There's always last year. Leicester, of course, coming off a loss in the Champions League 2-1 to Sevilla, as I mentioned earlier. Not a terrible performance. The result, it's okay. Got the away goal, but the reality is 17th in the Premier League on the cusp of the drop zone. Zero wins, zero league goals in 2017 so far. Let's hear now from our man in Leicester of the Leicester Mercury News. It is James Sharp. James, welcome back.
Yeah, good. Hi, thanks for having me on.
No worries. So listen, let's get right to it, shall we? The elephant in the room here. There's lots of reports and speculation about disharmony inside the locker room at Leicester. You know, a group of players, be it led by Kasper Schmeichel or someone else, against the manager. Is there anything to this, do you think?
I wouldn't say there's any kind of revolt led by anyone, but there's certainly been a bit of a disconnect, a bit of disharmony between the players and Ranieri a little bit. But a lot of that's a natural byproduct of things not going very well and Ranieri trying to maybe change too much to try and get that winning formula back. Obviously, last season, Ranieri didn't really have to do much, to be honest. I mean, that's not taking anything away from his achievement, because there were lots of kind of little things that he would do that would make the difference during games. But the core of the side was there. They had the wave of momentum from the season before, and the whole club and the whole team basically ran itself. But this season, when they've been playing not so well, it's been down to Ranieri to tweak things, and he's probably tweaked a little bit too much, and that's not gone down well with the players, who shifted a bit of the blame to other people and stuff. But yeah, to cut a long story short, there has been a little bit of disharmony between the two. But the hope is that this 2-1 defeat, even though it's a defeat, it's a very good result for Leicester. Hopefully that will lift spirits a little bit, because speaking to Danny Simpson after the game, and he was saying that in the dressing room afterwards there was a sense of the spirit of last season a bit there, and hopefully this could be a little bit of a turning point.
James, how did we get to this point? I mean, when you look at them, they're a point and a spot above the relegation zone. You know, here we are almost in March, where, you know, a year ago, you know, we all know where they were and what they went on to do. How did we get to this point? I mean, what's gone wrong this season?
Well, I guess, so last season, there was a lot of little things that happened at the same time to allow Leicester to have the most miraculous season that we've ever seen. So Leicester had that, like I said before, they had that wave of momentum from the previous season where they'd won seven of their last games. They had recruited brilliantly, none less so than N'Golo Kante, who we see how brilliant he is now, even with Chelsea and with France. All the other big name teams, they all struggled for their own different reasons. Chelsea were poor under Mourinho. Manchester United were going through transition. Arsenal and Tottenham were just Arsenal and Tottenham doing what they always do. And it allowed Leicester to get through it in this kind of perfect storm. And similarly, I found this season there's been a lot of different things that have all come together for Leicester to not perform as well. So, I mean, the loss of N'Golo Kante was huge, because he was so influential to Leicester's play last year. Leicester were always really poor at keeping the ball, but whenever they lost it, he would win it back. And for all the talk about Vardy and Mahrez scoring all the goals, well, you can't score goals when you don't have the ball, and that's what Kante did. But him aside, I think it's been difficult, because all of these players, none of these players ever expected to win the Premier League. None of them ever thought they were good enough potentially to win it, and they did. And they know, whether it be subconsciously, that they could never achieve that again. They've reached the pinnacles of their career already, and they're never going to get back to that. So there's always a natural. It's difficult to then motivate yourself to repeat it. I mean, you look at Manchester United and Alex Ferguson, the brilliance of him and his teams is that no matter how much success they had, they would always go again the next season. And Leicester found that difficult because Manchester United, whenever they won anything, as soon as it was won, the winners' medals would go into the draw and that would be over and they'd be looking at the next time. Leicester, because of how brilliant it was, they've celebrated it potentially too much, which is difficult to say because it's such an incredible story and it's such a miracle that it's something that deserves celebrating. But when that then has to translate into going again the next season, they found it difficult.
Yeah, it's a good point, and it's so hard to be critical of these players given what happened, because like you said, that was the greatest surprise and shock and one of the, if not the greatest story we've ever seen in English football, perhaps in sport overall. But what made last year's team so likable, I think, by so many, was the effort they put in. You know, the never say die attitude. It was incredible. They bled for each other on the field, and obviously that's been lacking somewhat this year for a variety of reasons. But for the fan base, is any of these players' reputations somewhat tarnished now, given what they can do last year compared to what they're seeing this year? And the two that stand out to me would be Mahrez and Vardy.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the fans always knew that they were never going to do this again because, well, as we say, it was so ridiculous last season. So the fans never expected this. But what they did expect was the club and the players and the team to be able to establish themselves as a solid mid-table Premier League team that could possibly push for Europa League spots if they had a good season. And that hasn't happened because they've essentially gone backwards for a variety of reasons. But yeah, I mean, the fans are frustrated by all this because of what they've seen them do. And I think there's a difference between Mahrez and Vardy, really, because Mahrez is a difficult one because even when he's playing well, he doesn't look like he's bothered because he's got that kind of languid style and it seems to come so naturally. It's just as though he's not really putting any effort in and it just happens for him. So when he isn't playing well and he looks like he's not putting any effort in, that doesn't look very good to the fans. So that's been a bit of a difficulty for him. And it's difficult again because teams don't give him the space and the time on the ball that he had last season. He's always double marked. He's always triple marked. But I think as the season's gone on and he's got less and less confidence, that's come to show in his performances as maybe not having that spark that he had, which is disappointing. Vardy, I think, is slightly different because he's getting a lot of stick from people for not putting in the effort. But if you look at the stats, he's covered the same amount of ground running that he did last season. He's put in more sprints. And if you look at his shot conversion rate, that's even higher than it was last season. But the problem he's had is he's hardly had any shots because the service team has been absolutely abysmal. And he's been feeding off scraps for most of the season, and that's got to be frustrating for someone who is just stood there at the top of the field chasing lost causes and nothing's coming your way. So yeah, it's disappointing to fans, but I think it's more due to kind of circumstance and lack of confidence than them not caring anymore.
We're talking to James Sharp of the Leicester Mercury News here on the Soccer Central podcast. James, what's the general feeling in town amongst the fan base towards Claudio Ranieri? I mean, a year ago, heralded as a hero and, you know, lauded from, you know, for all the work that he did. What's the general attitude towards the Italian now? And is there any possibility, any kind of talk behind the scenes of, you know, Leicester City making a managerial change before the end of the season?
Well, answer the fans' question first. There's certainly now become a bit of a split in the Leicester fans as to whether they feel that Ranieri should be given the rest of the season to show that he can turn it around, more out of respect for what he did last season than anything else, but also who else could they bring in who could have any more effect. So there's that group, but there's also what is always usually a vocal minority. So the people who get really angry and go onto Twitter straight after games and call for managers' heads all the time. That's usually a minority. I think it still is a minority, because even at the game yesterday and a lot of the games at home that they've been losing even now, there's been a lot of chants in favour of Ranieri among the stadium. But with every defeat that goes by, that vocal minority starts to get louder and becomes less minor. On the owner's point of view, all the noise is coming out of the club is that they do not want to get rid of him. They want to do anything but get rid of him. The owners put out that statement a couple of weeks ago saying that Ranieri's got their unwavering support, which is a very strong phrase to use, unwavering, especially since that has come out. They're out of the FA Cup. They've lost to Swansea. They're 1 point above the relegation zone. So if results against Liverpool and Hull go badly and then they're dragged into the relegation zone, that will be a test of how unwavering that support is. But they've shown patience in the past before, obviously 2 seasons ago when Nigel Pearson was there and they were bottom of the table for 4 months, and Pearson himself basically said, I know that if I was at another club, I probably wouldn't be here anymore. So the owners have shown faith and patience before in managers and trust. So the likelihood is, for now at least, that they still want to do that. If things go drastically wrong in the next 5 games or so and things are really bad, then maybe they'll look at it again. I mean, that's purely speculation, and by that time, is there any time left? But the last thing they want to do is get rid of Ranieri.
Let me ask you, James, before we let you go, this is the impossible question, but next season, what league is Leicester starting in, and who is Ranieri managing the team or not? Is that hard enough to say goodbye?
That's such a difficult question, yeah.
Your gut telling you?
My gut is telling me that I'm more worried this season than I was 2 seasons ago. Even though they were bottom of the table for 140 days. Let's take away the severe result for a second, because that may well prove a turning point. If we just forget that for a second and just look at their Premier League form. If nothing changes with that, if they carry on at the same line as they're doing now, they will go down, because they have been atrociously bad. The teams around them are picking up points and putting in performances. Leicester have just rolled over and been hammered. 2 seasons ago, even when they were bottom, they weren't being hammered. They were losing by the odd goal. This season, as soon as they can see one goal, that's it. So unless something changes, they will be going down. The hope is this bit of spark of hope that they've got from the Champions League can turn that down. Whether Ranieri will be there next season or not, that's a difficult question. My heart would like to say yes, but if they do go down, my head would probably say no, I think. But
we'll take that, man. It's a brave choice, but yeah, we get it. I know it's a hard one. It's the impossible question. I understand that. We hope they stay up, because they brought so much fun to the football conversation last season. And even this year, man, they're a talking point no matter what happens. And hopefully they can find a way to stave off the drop. There's some pretty bad teams around them still, so a lot can still happen. James, thank you so much. We'll talk to you before the season's out.
Yes, please. No problem. Thanks for having me on.
That is James Sharp of the Leicester Mercury News. You can follow James on Twitter at the Sharp End. That's Sharp with an E and End with an E. So 2 E's, the Sharp End. Always a great follow, and no one watches more Leicester than James there. And he makes a good point, though. I mean, they have been absolutely atrocious, especially the last number of weeks.
Yeah.
And you look at teams around, there's some bad teams. There really are, but there's some teams enjoying little bumps right now with new managers.
Swansea
being, you know, one that stands out. Hull, to a certain point as well. Palace, not so much. They're in big trouble. And Sunderland have been just dreadful forever, but they're still just 2 points away from safety. It's going to be a great race.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
can you call it a race when you're trying to avoid the bottom three?
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. Yeah.
Race to 17th.
Yeah. I think, although it certainly looks bad on paper losing to third tier Millwall, I think being out of the FA Cup will certainly help them.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I wonder too if getting eliminated by Sevilla wouldn't be the worst thing in the world as well, because.
But it's the easiest route to get back to the Champions League.
Wouldn't that be something if they ended up being relegated and, you know, win the Champions League and then they'd be back next year?
Yeah.
Wow.
It'd just be
another chapter to the amazing story.
Exactly. Yeah. Be have to wait, rewrite the story, the movie.
Yeah.
Do we know yet who's playing Jamie Vardy in the movie?
Didn't we come up with
we came up with a list at some point. At least we thought about it, then realized it was too hard and I think we decided Michael Fassbender or something would be a good Jamie Vardy.
I don't know who that is.
No? He's an actor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. At some point, we'll revisit that. Yes. Who should play Jamie Vardy? This weekend. It's a funny weekend because of, obviously, the Cup final on Sunday. So a lot of teams have byes.
Yeah, Arsenal and the two Manchester clubs.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Chelsea play Swansea. We have that game.
Yep.
9:30 Eastern on Sportsnet. We also have Everton against Sunderland on Sportsnet 1. Both those games on Saturday. Sunday, nothing?
No, nope,
because Sunday. Of... the aforementioned. However, Monday, Sportsnet World has you covered with
Leicester City and Liverpool.
That's the one. Thank you very much. Leicester, Liverpool, Sportsnet World at 2:45 or round about there.
Yep.
On Monday. Anything else you want to get to? Anything you want to mention from the site coming up?
No, just that we'll be going full MLS mode next week with season preview stuff.
10 days away, right?
Yeah. As the season kicks off, so we'll be looking forward to that. And we'll have like full or Premier League preview coverage for this weekend over the next couple of days. So,
what do you make very quickly of the new signing in TFC land, Vasquez, the playmaker?
I don't know a terrible amount of him about him, to be perfectly honest. But I mean, if he does what they hope that he does and kind of brings that creative spark as a playmaking midfielder in the center of the park, then it's a great signing. Interesting note, I had to look this up to confirm it, but he actually only played about, I think, 3 or 4 games for the Barcelona senior team, most of them in the Champions League. I was actually at one of them.
I saw your article.
Yeah, so I was, I was in Barcelona on vacation in 2008, and this was the last group stage game, and they were playing Shakhtar Donetsk at home, and they had already qualified, so they threw out like a B lineup. I mean, it was Eidur Jonsson starting. Messi, Xavi, and Iniesta didn't even dress. I think Thierry Henry was on the bench, but it was just like all youth team players. And Vasquez started. And it was kind of surreal because the previous weekend I saw Barcelona play Valencia and the Camp Nou was filled. It was like, it's 100,000 people. Mm-hmm. For this game, it was like a library. I think there was probably like 10,000 people there.
Cavernous,
yeah, right? It was just like...
Were they mainly in the upper ring or the lower
basically, rings? Basically, yeah. Really, so it was just surreal to sort of watch this team play, and Barcelona actually lost that game, but I mean,
so tell us about Vasquez's performance in
that
game. I
actually don't remember him.
You didn't like rush out to the store there and buy a shirt. Store, by the way, the Barca store at the Camp Nou.
Amazing.
It's amazing, isn't it? Oh, it's amazing. I spent a lot of money there, actually.
There you go.
And I never buy soccer stuff.
Yeah.
But I spent a lot of money there.
But yeah, I had to look it up because it was like, yeah, I wonder if he played in that game that I saw. So he not only played, but he started and played the full 90 minutes. But
he is a product of La Masia.
Yeah,
no matter what happens, that he's a product of La Masia.
Yeah.
And has played for Barcelona in the Champions League.
Yeah, can never take that away from him.
Never.
So
never.
We'll see. I mean, hopefully it works out the way that TFC does, because, yeah, I think it's if he can link up with Giovinco and Altidore and get the ball to them more quickly and serve as that sort of creative fulcrum in the midfield, then great. We'll see.
The shortest off-season in the history of sports is almost behind us. All right. Hope you enjoyed that. Thanks to James Sharp, Derek Brandow behind the glass. Thank you, Derek. Great job, JMO, as always. Thank you very much. Yep. We're back on Monday, I believe, with Dobby, Dunlop, and myself for the podcast. Until then, cheers for listening.